Lord Jesus, you have instructed us, you have commanded us to love our enemies. Jesus, are you kidding? Those are grand words and a high morality. But it is, in this world, absurd. In a world where our enemies steal, kill, and destroy, why would you call us to love them? And how, if we were foolish enough to want to obey you, how would we possibly do it? Jesus, I pray that you minister to our hearts today. Bring us your wisdom. For in this, we all fall short. Jesus, I pray in your name. Amen. Who is your enemy? Just take a moment. Think about it. Who is your enemy? Is there a face, a name that comes to your mind? Fix that person in your mind. Who is your enemy? There has to be someone. There has to be someone in your life that fits that category. Who is it that has taken from you things that are precious to you, that are crucial for your life? Who has stolen from you? Maybe property. Maybe peace of mind. Anything that your heart is attached to. Any relationship, any person that you are attached to. Has there been someone who has stolen from you? Who in your life has killed? Maybe they have literally killed. Maybe they have killed in the sense that Jesus speaks of murder, by hating, disregarding, diminishing, despising you or someone you love. Maybe this enemy is a whole group of people, a whole category. Maybe it's one individual. A colleague, a coworker, a neighbor, a mother, a father, a spouse, a child. Who is your enemy? Who has, in your life, not just stolen and killed, but also destroyed, wrought havoc? Not just in an instant, but across time. Maybe even across generations. Who is it in your family line, in your family history, who did a thing, who lived in a way, maybe two or three generations back, and in the process instilled a pattern that has wrought havoc generation upon generation? Again, maybe that's an individual, or maybe it's a group of them. Maybe it's a whole culture. Who is your enemy? Who is it that you look around in your day-to-day life, and in your memories, and in your hopes, and your dreams, and you fear them? Because maybe they haven't done a thing yet, but you know that they could steal or kill or destroy. These are not the people who just have a misunderstanding with you. But they can or have done commit real harm, genuine, actual, wounding, damaging, annihilating. Who are you vulnerable to? Who frightens you? What person or category of person does that describe? Who is your enemy? I'll tell you who one of my enemies was, is. It's actually a category. Some of you know I used to work as a therapist in the state prison system. I worked at Union Correctional Institute, which is in Rayford, Florida. It's not, like Disney, one of the happiest places on earth. We house death row there. You have to work really, really hard to get there, because not only do you have to do terrible things in the world in general, but then you have to do terrible things in the prison system. And if you do all of that, then you could come to the camp that I worked in. It's one of our max security prisons. To get in, you go through a sea of razor wire, you go through gates and fences, you go through metal detectors, you go past gun towers, you get checked and scanned and so forth and so on, and eventually you're in. Many times people who start work there, one morning they go to lunch that first day and they never go back, because it's a terrible place and it's filled with terrible people. And I worked with them every day. I had a caseload of over 100 people that I would meet with on a monthly basis. And I knew what they had done. Either I'd read police reports or I had at least heard it from their point of view, things that they had done. And they were terrible things. So I would sit every day with murderers and rapists and robbers and so forth. And many times they were quite unrepentant. They did not sit there and wring their hands and say, "Mr. Brown, I just can't live with myself." Many times they would wring their hands and say, "Can't you make this place more comfortable for me? Because it's so unfair that I'm here." And I would sit there. I had an office that was about the size of a broom closet. And I would always position myself by the door. And they would sit on the other side of the room from me. That was sort of psychological comfort, but it wasn't actually meaningful, because in the time it would take for them to leap out of their chair and do something deadly, I wouldn't have time to do much at all, because it was such a small space. And security was on the other side of the building, and so it was this little thin veneer of civilization as we sat and chatted with each other, and I took notes and so forth, but it was this thin veneer of civilization over the top of a very primal Lord of the Flies sort of phenomena. And I knew that it all hung by a thin thread. And I knew, too, that if anything happened, it wouldn't be for the first time in that prison. But every day I did that. And as I would sit there in my chair and take notes and listen to them and look concerned and interested and so forth, I held my pen in my hand as I took notes. And I always thought about it. I always thought, if they come at me, this is my weapon. This is all I've got. But I will use it to full effect. To the best of my ability, I will kill them with this pen. And I thought about how I would do it, what it would take, to actually kill that other human being with my pen. And I figured there was a slight chance that I could pull it off. And thus, every day, I continued to go to work and meet with person after person after person, each one of them thinking through, how will I kill them with my pen? Well, I was prepared to do so because they were my enemy. As much as I presented myself as someone who cared, and there was a part of me that did, because they were human beings as well, but as much as I presented myself that way, I can tell you that a lot of times my heart would just curdle in their presence. And I would find myself despising them for the things they had done, for the horror that they had wrought across countless lives, including my own as a vicarious victim of crime after crime after crime, as I had to sit there and listen and soak in the details day after day after day. And beyond that, to sit with that human being who committed those crimes and know that their greatest discontent was not that they had committed crimes, but because they were inconvenienced by the results. And I hated them. And in fact, there was that part of me that actually kind of wanted to kill them with my pen. If only they would act, then I could respond. And that would be one less pariah, one less evil person on the face of this earth. And that tore me up. Tore me up. Tore my soul, because I knew that Jesus had instructed us, in fact, he had commanded us to love our enemy. And I could not do it. Every day I sat with inmate after inmate after inmate, and they were all a mirror for me to stare into and see what my heart was made of. And I realized again and again and again that I did not have the heart of Christ, by no means. That inmate and I shared the same heart in many ways. And it brought me to my knees, because there was nothing that I could do to change that reality. Everything that I could do, I was already doing. I was a professional, nice guy. And I looked it. And I acted it. And I was kind. And I was merciful. And I advocated on these guys' behalf. I would talk to psychiatry to help them get the medicines they needed. I would help them if they had a physical ailment to get that cared for. I would interact with the security staff to try and help things go better. I spent all my time being a nice guy and doing good deeds every day. But that was about as much as I could do. It was enough for the world. The world was satisfied with that. And so every day I went in. But then I turned around and went home. I didn't ever have to stay, because I never killed anybody with my pen. So I got to stay or go home. I got to stay in my own home. Carried my keys. Kept my keys. So the world was satisfied. But I knew that I was far from the heart of God and that there was nothing I could do about it. And I would cry out to God, saying, Jesus, if this heart is going to change, you're going to have to do the work. Because I cannot achieve what you demand. And as I soaked in that reality, and I will say there was no quick fix. There was no moment where I prayed that prayer and the heavens parted and the angels sang and God went, and I was all better. There was nothing like that. I just soaked in it day after day after day, 3 years, day after day. And as I did so, I began to get more and more of a sense of what this whole enemy thing was all about. And I began to realize that what Jesus was commanding was actually extremely important. It wasn't some sort of divine pretension where God just came up with something so that he could show us how great he was and how foolish we were, and then thump us on the head and say, aha, see? No, it wasn't anything like that. This whole love your enemy thing was absolutely crucial, because the thing is, anyone can become your enemy. In this world, we're vulnerable to one another. In this world, we are affected by one another. And so if we ever begin to get the sense that someone who is nearby us is also in some form or fashion a threat to us, to our well-being, to our wants, to our needs, if they're going to impede or impinge on us, they become our enemy. Maybe in a small way, or maybe in a big way. But in some way, at that point, we are at odds with them. We are opposed to them, and they are opposed to us. And at that point, the whole dynamic, enemy against enemy, begins to unfold. It can be as simple as a minor clash between you and your spouse, or as dramatic as a war among nations, but still the dynamic is the same thing. It is, in essence, two human beings who are toxic to one another and who cannot figure out how to become a blessing to one another. And history, families, communities are littered with the debris from this problem, from this reality. And so when Jesus addresses it, it's hugely important. And it's something that is a complete mystery to this world. There's nothing that this world offers that can actually resolve the issue of enemies, the conflict among human beings. The best that this culture can offer is that we tolerate our enemies, or we subjugate our enemies, or we annihilate our enemies. Those are kind of the three options when you're dealing with actual enemies. The word tolerate or tolerance is a great buzzword today, and it sounds so wonderful. But I will say this, if you ask me, do you love your wife, and I said to you, well, I tolerate her, I'd be in a lot of trouble. Please don't tell my wife I said that. Tolerance is a pitiful substitute for love. Utterly pitiful. All it means is I'm going to endure your toxic, miserable presence as long as I can. But then I'm going to start to crush you and then obliterate you. And the only way that we're really going to be friends is if you're like me. Once we are clones of one another, and therefore you're no longer any sort of threat to me, then we'll get along. That's what the world offers. But Jesus comes along and says, love your enemy. And as crazy as that is, as impossible as that is, It's the only answer to the conflict among people. The constant, chronic conflict among people that has existed since the moment of the fall. Since the moment when God confronted Adam and Eve on their sin, and Adam pointed to his wife, said, "She did it." And from that point, the battle has gone on. And I will point out that it went so rapidly from "she did it" to the next generation killing each other. Cain killing Abel. Jesus has the only answer to that problem. We cannot turn to the Democrats or the Republicans for the answer to this one. And we cannot turn to the United Nations. And we cannot turn to a peace movement. And we cannot turn to a meme that says coexist. We cannot turn to any of that. We have to turn to Jesus. And what I will not do today is leave you with the moral instruction that you should love your enemy. Because that's impossible, except through Jesus. And so what I will tell you is, ultimately, the issue is not love your enemy. Ultimately, the issue is Jesus Christ save me. Jesus Christ change my life, change my heart. Jesus Christ so fill me with your life that I am no longer, listen to this, dependent on my enemy. I am no longer dependent on them acting or being any different in order to live, in order to be okay. If they continue on exactly and entirely the way that they are, Jesus, I am okay because my life comes from you. And so now, finally, I am free to do the impossible. Having no dependency on the actions and the character of a human being who is beside me, I am now free to love that human being. Because Jesus, whether I live or die, I am alive in you. And I am safe in you. And I am whole and healed in you. So when Jesus says, love your enemy, he's really saying, come to me. All you who are weary, who are heavy laden, who have been torn to shreds in this world, who have been wounded by the people who are closest to you, who have been torn by the people who are far away from you, who break your heart when you watch the news, who disturb your mind and trouble your peace when you walk out your front door, who frustrate you when you are in your own home, who have done terrible things, bring all of that to me. Bring me your broken heart. Bring me your broken life. Bring me your pain and your suffering, your sadness. Bring to me the sins that you have committed in response to the sins that others have committed against you. And let me refresh you. For my yoke is easy. My burden is light. Jesus and Jesus alone can make us whole. And as he does so, we are then free to do the impossible and love others, especially our enemies. And this changes everything. This changes families. This changes communities. This changes the globe. another of my enemies. I know many of you would share this. Another of my enemies was a whole cluster of people, a whole cluster of nations known at one time as the Soviet Union, the evil empire. I can tell you it was a strange moment when I was a missionary there in that part of the world. And I found myself in the home of a young man, one of my students, whose father had died some 10 years earlier of radiation-related illness. He'd been in the Army, and he had worked at a nuclear missile site. And because the Soviets weren't so great about taking care of their own people, this man died of radiation-related illness. And I can remember lying in bed one night as I was visiting this home of these people and thinking what an irony it was that I was in the home of a man whose nuclear missile had been aimed at my front door for all of the years of the Cold War, nation up against nation. But somehow, Jesus had entered into that story. And now people who had been bent on one another's destruction shared love, shared the grace of God. Misha was one of my dearest friends. That's only possible because of the saving, healing, redeeming work of Jesus Christ. Who is your enemy? Fix them in your mind and then turn to Jesus and ask him to do in you the impossible, to heal you, to make you whole, to fill you with his life so that you may turn and love that person, love your enemy. Jesus, do this work in us today. Amen.